to the hackers and the crackers. I see in binary, I speak source code. Step on my toes, I'll post a million JPEGs of you in a fag pose. In your digital stance, hitting firewalled hoe. Cause I'm riding the net in my 6-4. I was a dick with my 56. Now with my cable, I'm able to get that stable. On the out, my name is Ace and I'm a Leo. On the digital highway, my name is Neo and I'm a hero. In a flash, I'll school you on burning Dreamcast. You need some ISOs? Let me through my hard drive rifle. Our exchange you could never stifle. In a digital hug, you just caught the love bug. I bootlegged your CD. I caused the fight between Un and Jay-Z. To CG, it's all gonna be free. Whether we take it by force or we take it nicely. You feel that rattle in your bones? When I tell you we just hacked Dow Jones? And NASDAQ leaves you flat on your back? Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. This is dedicated to the hackers and the crackers. Serial codes, source codes, ISOs, RANs, ZIP 6. This is dedicated to the hackers and the crackers.
Welcome to Binary Revolution Radio. This is a very special episode with no episode number. I'm your host, Verbal, and with me is Savant. I'm sure you're all familiar with him. Hello. He's done a few shows before.
Hello. Yeah, you sticking me yet? Okay.
All right. Today, we're actually going to do a very technical, in-depth episode on the current state of botnets, and we'll also go into a little bit about, you know, looking at some of the next-gen botnet technologies that we're starting to see and maybe what we will be seeing in a couple of years.
So botnets, that's where the Transformers hang out, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
So before we get started, we have a little housekeeping to do. I have a couple things, and I think Savant had a couple of things.
Yeah.
So what I want to mention first of all is that just give an update on the mentorship program. The last time I was on the show, I had said that it was going great, and it's still going great. But the thing is, we do need more mentors. I still get about one email at least a week. Asking about the mentorship program, and mostly it's people who want to be mentees, and the list of people who are requesting to be mentees are slowly climbing. So if you have any skill at all in anything and have the time, and you know that's the important part, make sure you have the time to do this, just send me an email and tell me what you're willing to mentor people in, and I will hook you up with someone as soon as I can. And also, right now, we are working on a web page to kind of facilitate things a little bit with the mentorship program. It'll have some automated submissions for requests, you know, so I don't have to personally look through every email and, you know, fucking, you know, do all that shit myself. And also, there's going to be some tools like a wiki page and, you know, just a way to browse, like, the number of people who are involved in this and to see, you know, what kind of expertise are out there that maybe, you know, you didn't know you wanted to learn something or thought that no one knew it that you can, you know, ask us about. So that's going to be coming along. We're working on that now. The second thing I had to say is actually right now, you know, within the DDP, we've been talking about doing a lot of projects. I mean, we've always have ideas and things in the pipeline, just not, you know, time is always against us. So I am actually asking for people who are listening and people on the forums, I mean, whoever, to see whether there's an interest in people participating in BinRev projects, mainly for coding. We need some web designers, but you know, I'm not going to go into the details of each project right now, but if you have some free time and you know how to code at all, you know, please let me know, and I'll kind of, you know, keep your file on somewhere, and when we need you, which will be very soon, we'll call on you. Some of the areas we're looking for are web dev people, web designers, and people coding, and I mean, coding in anything, really, just like C, Java, or even C Sharp, and people to write some scripts for stuff we have, you know, whatever. So just let me know, and you can email me directly at verbal@binrev.com, or you can just email, you know, the general radio feedback email, feedback@binrev.com, and just let us know there. Savant, do you have anything you want to add?
Yeah, okay, so recently we had, in Southern California here, a little Xbox mod party, or at least that was the plan. What it ended up turning into was an impromptu BinRev West Coast meeting, where we had a little barbecue, and everybody got together, and we hacked some Xboxes, and had a pretty good time. And so what I'd like to do for us West Coasters out here is set up something a little more formal, maybe a monthly meeting where we all get together and have a floating location where we can get together and have a trip. One thing we're talking about doing is possibly a hacking Disneyland trip. So if you're on the West Coast or willing to make a drive or a flight, give us a shout. And I highly recommend that people in other regional areas set up something similar to sort of break the tedium of just a weekly, a monthly meeting. Now, not to say that there's anything wrong with the meetings, because there's not. You should go to them. If there isn't one in your area, you should set them up. But I'd like to see something where other meetings get together to do a coastal or a regional meeting where maybe once every couple months we make something out of it. So Disneyland is on the agenda, and if you have any other ideas, we'd like to hear it. You can send us an email to verbal@binrev.com or savant@feartubes.com. And yeah, give us your feedback. Let us know how it goes.
So. Yeah, like, it started out as a thing where, you know, like, I'd come down to San Diego for a while, and, you know, a couple of times, and I found out recently that Savant was here, so we've been hanging out. You know, Strom's in L.A., so whenever I would come down, he would come up, and we just kind of got, like, a little gathering going, and, you know, like, people like Gene Eric, who recently started going on the IRC channel, he's from this area, too. So, I mean, I'm sure there's a ton of people on the West Coast, and we just want to get something going because, you know, we're kind of doing that anyway, just kind of extending the invitation out to all Bin Revers out there.
Yeah, Florida's monopolized the awesome people in Bin Rev in terms of getting together and making it really established. So let's get something going.
All right, so I think that's all the housekeeping we have. And in contradiction to true Bin Rev radio style, we are not going to do an emails. We have too much content, and we didn't want to break the show up into multiple shows, so we're just going to dive right into the main topic. So the main topic, as I said before, are botnets. Now, to my knowledge, there hasn't been a BinRev Radio on this topic, and, you know, it's something that's becoming more and more prominent. You know, if you went to the last DEF CON or any of the recent cons that happened, there have been talks about them, you know, a couple of talks, and they kind of basically just gloss over what they are and, you know, who uses them and why. But we're going to try to dive in a little bit and see if we can't, you know, expose the botnet phenomena.
Open the kimono.
What?
Yeah, open the kimono.
I've never heard that expression before.
Okay. Well, it's one I picked up on the late night covert amateur videos. Anyway.
Okay. All right, so let's start with the easy stuff. What is a botnet? So a definition that we kind of came up with is by no means, you know, authoritative, but what we think a botnet is a collection of compromised computer systems that are coordinated and used by a third party to do something. And, you know, we'll get into that a little bit later. But the point is that it is... the computer systems in the botnet are compromised, and the third party, you know, is most likely a malicious party that wants to do something, you know, because they're compromising boxes to begin with. But, you know, they kind of end up forming an overlay network over the internet, and they somehow coordinate together and, you know, do something, stuff that we'll talk about later. And
It's also important to mention we kind of define them as compromised hosts, but this is not necessarily always the case. There are a couple reasons where a person might want to set up a legitimate botnet, and they may rent one from a bot hosting provider that you can find on the internet, or perhaps they just want to run a series of bots in IRC channels to help command and maintain things like operator features and additional features such as, well, Hounddog, the IRC bot that used to hang out in the BinRev channel, would do things like convert URLs into tiny URL format and vice versa. So it's not necessarily evil, but 90% of the bots that are in circulation probably are. And in case you're wondering where I got those numbers, I'm referencing them directly out of my ass.
Yeah, that's always a good place to put numbers.
The Wikipedia article actually references my ass, so I figured it was moderately authoritative.
If it's on the internet, it must be true.
It must be true.
Okay. So now that you kind of get a feel of what a botnet is, obviously there's a reason for, you know, having them, or else you just use your own freaking computer. So why, you know, we want to know why these botnets are set up and why people are going to take the time to compromise machines or to buy them. Actually, you just mentioned that people will sell you botnets. Is that true?
Yeah. You can go, if you go into any of the major IRC channels that don't explicitly prohibit them, I believe Fnet has a bot-friendly policy, and I know that GigaChat.net does. If you scan the topics of the channels in there, oftentimes you'll see advertisements for companies that will rent out bots and that you can buy them on a monthly subscription.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. All right. So if you need bots and you don't want to own any boxes, then I guess you can pay for it. But, okay, so...
It's worth mentioning that if you're going to buy a botnet and you're going to pay for it with money, don't be a noob. If you're going to use it for malicious purposes, don't buy it with credit or something with your name on it. I know that goes without saying, but I don't want to feel responsible if somebody gets pwned because they weren't paying attention, but they were listening to the
just
show.
Just use someone else's credit card.
Yeah, exactly. You're golden.
They're like $3 a piece. Come on. Okay, so once you get one, what can you do with it? You know, like, some people have them for, you know, whatever, like stealing money from your grandmother, or like Savant said, you know, you're running bots on IRC just to do whatever, you know, keep the channel alive or do whatever you want. So actually, I'm going to tell Savant to talk a little bit about this because he has some experiences in how people actually use botnets.
Okay, so we're going to go over a bit of the malicious features. Nobody listening to the radio show is terribly interested in the squeaky clean functionality of a botnet. So one of the things that a botnet is used for is click fraud. So say you've got a website that's not doing too well and you might have Google Ads or some other sponsorship through a company that's basically paying you per click that you receive on their website. It's a pretty basic concept, so I'll just skip over what clicking referral services do. But what a person with a botnet might do would be to have 10,000 or however many machines autonomously click a link, which will then accrue, you know, $0.05 per click or what have you. And so if you have 10,000 bots on 10,000 different IP addresses, that's, you know, however much money times 5 cents, you know, it adds up pretty quickly. But a more common use for botnets would be for denial of service attacks, although with a botnet it would be specifically a distributed denial of service. And if there's anyone out there that doesn't know, that is where a series of computers, which are controlled by a centralized server known as a command and control server, wait for requests by the botmaster to attack a site. So they're all listening for a specific command where they will wake up and fire up their elite ODA UDP.perl.dos program and just send a shitload of traffic down the pipes to where eventually there's just so much traffic that it knocks the host off the internet. A couple years back, and I want to say it was in 96, and I can pull out the book if anybody's really interested, there was a guy named Mafia Boy who was generally considered to be a script kiddie by most, and he got laughed out of most of the IRC channels he went into. So he thought, well, I'll show them how tough I am, har, har, har. And he set up a botnet and ended up taking down, I think he took down Yahoo, he took down eBay, he took down Microsoft, a series of high-profile, big-money sites with large legal teams behind each of them. And yeah, he did get arrested, and as far as I know, he is still in big-ass trouble for it and is probably still being punished.
And then he went to jail.
And then he went to jail. So let that be a lesson to you. And then, let's see what else. So, wares. Okay, let's talk about this a little bit. Even though I know that all of our listeners are honest, upright citizens who would never dream of pirating software, open source for life, there is such a thing called wares. It is illicit software that is distributed despite copyright laws. And these bots will be set up in such where they will host the files themselves on the servers. And you can join an IRC channel and issue a command that will cause the bot to display a list of all the files that are available to it, and then with another command, it will queue up and then send you that file, which makes it really convenient for downloading your prawn and your software. there's programs out there, such as one called Bottler, which will log into an IRC channel and will automatically query every bot in the channel for a list of available downloads, and then sort of act as a macro to allow you to point and click download the wares through these bots. Of course, it's worth mentioning that almost every IRC network I've ever seen will ban you immediately, will K-line your ISP if you are using Bottler. So don't do it.
Including irc.binrev.net, maybe, if I find it and get around to it.
Yeah. So if you're pirating softwares on Binrev and Verbal Board, you might get your ass kicked.
Actually, so I was, from my experiences, for wares sites like you talked about, what are you drinking? You have this huge-ass bottle, and...
This is from Rock Bottom Brewery here in San Diego. It is a growler of red beer. It's 64 fluid ounces of yumminess.
Support your local brewery.
Support your local brewery.
Anyway, so from what I've seen, people who kind of want to set up wares networks, either on IRC or from FTP sites, they own boxes manually. Now, I don't know if that's just because, you know, they don't have access to a botnet or if they're just not used to it, but are there any kind of, not differences, but pros and cons to owning boxes with a botnet via, you know, manually? Maybe, like, you don't usually get root with a botnet or whatever, you know, that would kind of make people who are setting up wares networks on, you know, to host their wares on FTP sites, kind of attract them more to a manual owning or manual routing rather than using a botnet?
Well, I think what we're seeing with wares in regards to bots in the transition between manually owning a box versus automated box owning is that nowadays it's so easy to script and automate a an attack that it's not necessarily to have any large level of skill. And so a lot of people that you're seeing that are trafficking wares, the ones that aren't hardcore into the scene and running with Razor and the other groups that you might see in that little mockumentary TV show called The Scene, they tend not to be that talented, and so they will prefer the automated attack method. And with the proliferation of PHP exploits and things, you don't need root to actually to upload files or to host them. In fact, you don't need any special privileges to run an IRC bot. And since the IRC port is so high that you can open it up on the system without actually having root privileges, so provided the firewall doesn't block it explicitly, that's a really handy way to get in there, upload a file, publish a link, have the botnet log into a specific channel, and you're up and ready to go.
All right. So what other things do people use it for? Because I know there's some other uses, like shell bots and things like that. I don't know if you want to expand on that.
Sure. So what a shell bot is keeping in line with the tradition of how a command and control bot works. Rather than offer files or do DDoS attacks, it simply does a pass-through and allows you to run commands on the system. So in some degree, if you're familiar with Linux or understand the operating system that the bot is on, you can send commands to it as if you were sitting right in front of the box, and it will respond to you through IRC or through the command and control network in instant message. So you can, in theory, cause a lot of boxes to RM-RF flash or format themselves or you know, who knows, download the latest Britney Spears MP3 and spam people through asterisk or something. I don't know.
So you can have 1,000 copies of that MP3?
Yeah, see, in case you're ever wondering how Britney Spears still has a career, that's why. So stop it! So she'll go away! Anyway.
Actually, at my hotel this morning, so I get up at around noon, and I fucking walk out the door, and I pick up the newspaper, and on the front page it says, Britney Spears is K-fed up and seeks divorce.
Oh.
And why, you know, never mind. I'm just wondering why she's still on the front page.
That's a front page goodness. So we're back from some technical difficulties. We had a caller call in. Nobody realized that this was a call-in radio show. So anyway, back to the topic at hand.
Right. We covered a bunch of ways that, you know, what things you can do with the botnet. So, you know, in order to kind of figure out, you know, why they exist and all of that, we're going to talk a little bit about who uses them. So obviously when you're talking about, you know, all these click fraud DOS attacks, They're probably people with malicious intent, maybe extortion or, you know, just to get money from redirects or whatever. But I just want to ask Savant, like, do you know what specifically, what groups of people? Because, you know, like, there are several classes of, you know, these quote-unquote supervillains. Like, for example, you know, it could just be bored kids sitting at home or, like, the Russian mob or whatever. You know, do you have any information that you're allowed to divulge about that?
Sure. I mean, I won't get into any specifics, but, yeah, there are several different classes, like you said, of people who will use botnet. First and foremost, would be the obvious one would be phishers. Phishers often use botnets to I totally derailed my train of thought. Anyway, so phishers will use botnets maybe through the latest Internet Explorer O-Day and will infect your machine. And then from that, they will use your box to send out spam email. One example, lately we're seeing a spike in spam activity, and that was recently being attributed to by Jose Nazario at Arbor Networks as directly related to spam and to botnets and to the malware problem. So and one example is these guys are sending out spamming phishing emails for penny stocks, and there'll be some, you know, random crap Acme Chemical Company stock that's maybe selling for 30 cents a share, if that, and they will spam it up. And that will generate enough interest to where the stock's price will start to rise, and slowly but surely it will gain more momentum, and then serious traders will see that there's a lot of activity on this site that they received some random fax for, some email for, some company, and then they'll, you know, say, oh shit, Acme Chemical Company is going up, buy, we want some of this, and that will cause the stock's price to skyrocket, and then at the last minute, the stocks will sell the prices, the attackers will sell when it's really high, and since it's all artificial inflation, since the company doesn't really either exist or doesn't have a viable product, then once the hype disappears, then the stock price will plummet, so that everybody who bought at $50 a share suddenly finds themselves holding 5,000 shares worth a dollar each, and so they've essentially handed over all of their money, the other $49 per share, to these attackers.
All right. Yeah. So, I guess most of the uses are malicious. But I mean, you have an army at your disposal, and it depends on how you're going to use it. Okay. So let's move on and let's actually talk about how they work and, you know, how you can build a botnet of your very own. Okay. So the first thing is.
Did you hear that? Giant ass cricket just.
Flew in here.
Office.
All right, we need to edit that out.
Okay.
We're not going to be able to have that.
3 and 4 minutes. Anyway.
We're going to have to edit. Okay. Okay, so, anyway, I lost my train of thought. Okay, yeah. Basically, there are two parts to every single bot in the botnet. You have a part that does all the networking, that talks to the other bots and receives commands, and you have a part that deals with the host. You know, initially, it'll exploit the local host with whatever zero-day you have, and then it will kind of actually do the work, right? So if if you think about on the bot, there's some program running there, and, you know, there are techniques to hide it and all that stuff, but we won't get into that right now. As for the whole botnet network, there are also two main parts, one is the bots themselves that actually execute the command, and they are your network. And the other part is what is most commonly referred to as the command and control. So, I mean, the point is once you have these bots that you own out there and that you control, you have to somehow control them via some channel that's out of band. Now, up until recently, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that most people have been using IRC to deal with this. So what they would do is say, you know, have all their bots log in to some IRC channel after it's been compromised, and the actual person who is, you know, controlling the botnet will go and, you know, execute commands on each bot. And it's also a good way to keep tabs on the bots so you can see, like, you know, how many bots you have and stuff like that. So those are the main parts. Now
that's absolutely right.
Right. So The other thing, you know, you want to know is how do they connect with each other? Most of the botnets right now are actually pretty primitive technologically. So the way that most of the botnets know about each other is that they just have some list. So if you're, you know, in the command control, or I mean, if you are in the IRC channel, then you know who everyone else is, and you know that's one way to do it. And the other way is you can actually just, people just keep like a static list, or I mean not static, keep a list of all the bots that are in the network. And if some new bot gets owned, or if someone new bot joins, then they'll just all add that new bot to the list. You know, so that's how they keep everything.
It's worth mentioning that most of the time that the IRC command and control servers are set up that way, the channel that they are collaborating in will tend to be password protected. And so it is assumed, although not always true, that if you have a password, then you must be a member of the botnet. Of course, this doesn't take into account researchers or other hackers who may have compromised a single host in the bot network and then use that information to log in themselves to monitor them.
Okay, so definitely. So let's go back to kind of the actual bot for a little bit. Now, in each bot, you have the part that kind of owned the box to begin with, so obviously it has to have some code to exploit, you know, certain things. So it's almost like a worm, right? And now, the question, I guess, is to you, Sivan, is whether, you know, the actual bot will have a bunch of exploits, or if usually they just kind of have one that they try to use and try to spread with that exploit as much as possible, or if they're kind of more intelligent and, I guess, polymorphic like the worms we've been seeing lately.
Generally speaking, most of the bots we've seen out there have been pretty much off-the-shelf modifications of commercially available and traditionally non-malicious bots, such as the egg drop bot or an energy mech bot. But the ones that are custom written will have these exploit vectors that you're talking about. The majority of them will only take advantage of one vulnerability. For example, my favorite recent vulnerability is the PHP gallery or image view gallery exploit, which allows you to upload anything you want. And what they'll do is automatically upload a web shell, which will then run a system command that will download the botnet files from a server offsite, and that will and automatically install itself. The majority of them, to answer your question, tend to be one-trick ponies, although I'm sure that polymorphic or Hydra-style multi-headed botnets do exist. They just tend to be operated and installed by people who maybe have a little bit more skill and know how to not get caught, essentially.
Right. So that's the actual, you know, part that does the exploiting. So let's go through the life cycles of one. Let's start by when a host gets infected. Now, when, let's say, you know, you obviously want your botnet to grow. So in order to own more boxes, are they usually, say, you know, the person who originally installed them will just go out there and keep on trying to infect more hosts, or do the bots themselves take the responsibility of trying to own more hosts with that actual exploit that itself was owned with?
It's a combination of both, although one bot that I'm seeing recently is by the same guy who wrote the Santee worm not too long ago, which utilized a PHP bulletin board exploit and Google to compromise sites. So these new bots now have Google searching capabilities, which I might add do not use the Google API and therefore are still illegal, but I digress. So then these bots will troll Google and look for new additions that are to have vulnerable sites, and then it will spread itself, and those bots will then exponentially start looking for other hosts to infect, and it just keeps on going, and until the last bot's dead or the last vulnerable box has been patched, that it will still continue to function even long after the group that is controlling it has moved on to bigger, better things, or a different IRC network, or maybe even a different infection vector.
But I mean, so once they do that and they move on, and like let's say for the sake of argument, they're using an IRC channel to coordinate. These are basically zombies that, you know, just go around infecting machines that have no one sending them commands, right?
Correct. They'll usually just sit there idle. And you can still find ghosts and botnets all over the place. We talked briefly about Nepenthes in a previous episode, which is a honey net that emulates vulnerabilities in Windows systems and catches all the worms that are flying around the internet at any given time. And you can still find hundreds of bots that just log into a network and sit there static because maybe the person running them went to college or got a girlfriend or got arrested or maybe makes a cushy living at Google now or Cisco.
Yeah, so anyway, so that's how they spread. And now with the networking protocols that they use, how do they commonly like talk to each other? Do they just open some random port, and do they have their own specific protocols, or do they not do kind of a peer-to-peer thing, and they all just log into the one central command system? I mean, like, how sophisticated are these?
They're sophisticated in that they almost all of them will have some form of auto-update feature, where, you know, Hacker X can say, okay, now I want you to log into this network and this channel, and it will push the file to one location, and each of the bots will then download it, and then they'll get the hell out of Dodge and join the new network. But by and large, you have to remember that these are scripts that are generally written in haste and tend to be written to serve only one function, and so we're not seeing a whole lot of terribly sophisticated ones. But, you know, but it's worth mentioning that the ones that we're finding are not necessarily indicative of the newest thing out there. They're just getting better about not getting caught as the botnet problem continues to rise in the public eye and on the front of researchers' minds.
Yeah. So you mentioned about the updating thing. Now, when you update a botnet, do you actually kind of just replace the whole executable that's running on the compromised host?
Actually, usually it's just a configuration file. So
okay.
They'll put it on a website, and then maybe once every 10 days or X period of time or at a certain command in the command and control server, it will then reach out, grab a web page, or maybe check an email account or log into an FTP server and then just download a quick text file and will then download itself. Although it would be trivial to just have a subroutine in that text file that would then tell itself to update the binary. So both are certainly possible, although in terms of trends, it's usually just a configuration file for the command and control server, not seeing too many feature upgrades.
Right, so I mean, basically these bots aren't really learning any new tricks, and I guess that's a byproduct of how they're used, mainly. So if you have them in the IRC channel, the first thing that comes to mind is that it doesn't really seem to scale really well. It's like, okay, you can have, 100 bots in there, or, 1,000 or whatever, but after a while, if I were doing it, it might be kind of a hassle to update and keep track of all of them in one IRC channel, because you have to kind of send updates to them, and you have to kind of, tell each one of them what to do. Now, I mean, you can definitely send, a message to all of them, have them do stuff, but with the scalability, before we get into how it scales, let's talk about what you're really seeing out there in terms of size. Like, what's kind of the average size of the botnets that you're seeing? Some of the smaller ones that people just do, like, for DOSing people that, like, make fun of them on RC or whatever, are probably fairly small, let's say, 100 nodes or whatever. But do you really see any really large botnets that span four or five figures in?
I forget which country it is, but recently, and I want to say it was a Dutch country or somewhere in the Netherlands, but they discovered something like a 6 million node botnet. That's a lot of computers. 6 fucking million bots out there at the command of one person. When you have a botnet that big, then suddenly you start to gain interest from a lot of people, and not just the law enforcement officials, but organized criminals or extortionists. One really common usage for botnets would be to hijack a casino, an online gaming site, and extort money from them, saying, hey, you make $5 billion a day, but if you have 10 seconds of downtime, it costs you a Ferrari every second. So, you better give us $500,000 or we're going to disappear and take your business with us. And generally, these casinos will be run out of, Brazil or something, and their policy has always been to just shut up and pay, because it's so much cheaper for them to pay off the extortionists than it is to loot the business. But like you were saying, the pissant botnets, which I like to call them, we had a visitor in the IRC channel not too long ago who thought that he would flex his e-penis and knock a couple of the ops offline. His botnet was something really retarded small. I think it was like 30 tops, and he was coloing it from his other little noob buddies. And we'll get into that a little bit later in terms of how we found out as much as we know about him. But let's just say that if you're going to be an asshole and talk smack to people that are smarter than you, make sure you lock all your doors and windows.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, we'll definitely get into that later. Now, so with that botnet, the 6 million node botnet, I mean, not even 6 million nodes, let's say it's like 5,000.
Sure.
Do you think they can still control it from an IRC channel?
Well, one thing that, again, Jose Nazario was saying was that we're seeing a migration from IRC to sort of other more covert channels. In some cases, HTTP or over FTP or basically any protocol that you can send and receive information from. Hell, even UDP, just send information, you can control a botnet from. And the thing is since this is such a new idea and they're starting to do this, unless you've managed to capture a worm in the wild or you've managed to, you have a system that got owned and you're looking for your files and you're starting to see some of this new stuff, it's so new that we don't have too many statistics on where they're going other than it's starting to get quiet on IRC.
Well, so, I mean, okay, so regardless of the transport protocol you use, they all still, I mean, from what we've talked about so far, they still, all the bots still log on to one place to get their command, right?
Correct.
I mean, if you have 6 million bots, you're not going to have 6 million connections coming in to some place and controlling them. Or, I mean, is that what they're doing? Because that seems to be, you know, pretty indicative of something messed up going on if you have, like, you know,
like a single point of failure,
yeah,
for 6 million bots.
Well, not even just the failure, but it's like from a forensics perspective where you just see like, okay, all these machines are not going to this like random.
Right. Site. Some schmuck's box in Korea where he runs a netstat and sees the 6 million random connections and wonders why he's not getting his Britney MP3s anymore.
Right.
Well, one thing you'll see a lot is redundant IRC connections. So the better the botnet is, maybe you'll have half of them or all of them will log into 6 different IRC networks, and they'll be logged in simultaneously. So if one goes down or they get popped, then there's 5 more or 4 more or however many. And as long as at least one or two bots are still online, then you can still upload a configuration file like we were talking about and move it. But so say you've got 10 out of those 6 million bots that are simultaneously in maybe 5 different channels. All that bot would then have to do would be to assume the role of a virtual botnet herder and utter to the, you know, however many thousand nodes in each of the different networks the command to switch to a different network. So there's some level of redundancy in that aspect where they leave themselves a couple doors and ways to pick up shop if they need to.
Okay, so, I mean, because I was asking earlier whether the bots themselves talk to each other. So some of the more sophisticated ones you have seen that do that.
Correct.
And kind of spread information kind of in a peer-to-peer fashion.
Yeah, the Energy Mech bot is really popular for that. It's got that sort of fail-safe or redundancy. And Energy Mech's open-source software. You can download it right now if you Google it. If you stand by for 1 second, I will get you a link. Energymech.net, how easy is that? There is an IRC channel called number EMEC, pound EMEC. On stalling, I don't know which network this is. Well, I'll get back to that in a second.
Yeah, we'll put it in the show notes. And disclaimer, VinRev does not officially support the use of malicious software.
Yeah, don't do it. And if you do, don't tell them you heard it from us.
Exactly.
Don't ruin it for the rest of us. This is why we can't have nice things.
Exactly. Listen to the man. Okay, so now we talked about how kind of they work and how they spread and how many of them there are and how they're controlled. Let's get into kind of the after, the, you know, the process, like what do you do after that or what happens after a botnet is deployed. So let's go with the most interesting thing. Let's say you have some douchebag who is DOSing you, DDOSing you.
Well, let's, for the sake of argument, let's just call him Google Man. Just, I like that name. I like Google. I like men. Ah, shit. Someone's going to loop that into a remix.
And it's probably
it's going to be Stank Dog, too. He's going to get back at me.
Okay, so what kind of stats would you go to take over someone's botnet? So let's say I have my awesome FearTubes 30-node botnet.
Okay.
And I DDoS you and Stank and Ratchet and whoever else is on
Strom.
IRC. And Strom, of course. And, you know, like, how would you take over my botnet?
Well, first things, we need to know at least some of the bots in the node or their IP addresses. So hopefully you've got some form of firewall that will drop, you know, fragmented packets, or that you can run a PCAP and just get some of the IP addresses of the bots that are attacking you. From there, run a port scan. Find out if they have any listening services open. In this case, our Google man buddy left, I think it was 2 or 3 of his 30-node FearTubes botnet. He left a high open port. It was like port 4000. And I thought that was weird. Port 4000. So, you know, fire up Telnet, connect to port 4000, hit enter twice, and bam, all of a sudden we're looking at a bash shell. So, ta-da! Nothing over here, nothing over here. Whoop! Rabbit out of the hat. And so, in this particular instance, once we gained access to the shell, a quick listing of the running processes revealed that there were connections coming from an odd file running out of the temporary directory. So you go to /temp, check out the file, and all of a sudden, oh, what's this? They're logging into googleman.noob.net bang idiot, and the password is noob tacos, and the admin is, you know, bang@bang.noob.net or bang at bang, or maybe verbal at star.star. So depending on how they've got the bot herder configured, it's sometimes as simple as just changing your nick to that of the person commanding them, and all of a sudden you've authenticated yourself, or you've got the password in combination with the nick. Or if you're really good and you're really angry, you could compromise the host of the bot herder so that you've got a trusted host, and then you're just assumed permission to control the bot network. So actually, some of the malware is kind of interesting that we've been catching has the passwords built into the executable. So if you're just running TCP dump or Wireshark, you can see the authentication going across the wire. Even if it's obfuscated in some way, you can do a TCP replay attack and send the hash down the line, so it will definitely match with what the bot's expecting. And then from that point, you can usually just take over.
Well, I mean, basically the thing is, you know, exercise the if you don't want your botnet to get taken over, you know, exercise the same security you would normally if you were just doing whatever from your own box.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, like, I know that it's kind of different because you have all these machines, supposedly. The botnet controller has all these machines that he has access to, and he's not going to baby them, each one of them, like he would his own box. But, I mean, you got to keep that in mind. If your bots are vulnerable, and, you know, they probably are because you own them, then, you know, just don't do anything stupid and don't get traced, and, you know, you should be okay. I mean, Jesus. Common sense, people. Going back to the scalability of botnets for a second, not so much how many bots are in one particular botnet, but, like, at this moment, how many botnets would you say are out there right now?
That's a really good question, and you kind of caught me off guard. I'm scrambling to try and find statistics on it. Would you accept a buttload? Would that be a viable answer?
I think that will work. Let me see buttload.
Let me... Ding, ding, ding! All right, $3,000. In all seriousness, though, we can't really have any terribly accurate measure. All we can seriously measure is how many reported botnets there are. And it's worth mentioning that the average lifespan of a single bot network tends to last 24 hours or less, which, believe it or not, if you've got, you know, 10,000 bots all running a DOS attack, the administrators of a majority of those boxes, if they don't have their heads surgically implanted in their asses, are going to realize that something funny is going on. Maybe their customers can't get their porn or whatever, so they're feeling an abnormal number of phone and email complaints. They tend to go down pretty quickly. So it's kind of a cop-out answer, but at any given time, that number fluctuates so greatly that it's kind of hard to get an idea.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So basically the message is, botnets are out there, and they're not, you know, a toy for, but, you know, run by like a couple of people sitting in their fucking dark room and twiddling their whiskers or whatever. You thought I was going to see something else, but anyway, yeah, so, I mean, they're out there, and it's not enough that your other computer is a cray anymore, you know? it's all about the numbers. So, you know, whether you want a botnet of your very own, or if you want to just protect against them, just have it in your mind that they exist, you know, and you gotta be aware of that and take precautions. So we kind of went through most of the stuff that we had, but do you have anything else about kind of how not to get caught or, you know, whatever, or found out if you do have a botnet of your own? Because, I mean, we mentioned basically like not doing anything stupid, but, I mean, once you have a botnet out there and you want the shelf life to be more than 24 hours, then it's like, what kind of measures can you take?
Okay, well, let me put on my black hat for a second. Well, one thing you want to do to avoid getting noticed is, well, don't do any dumb shit thing that's going to get you noticed. If you're running a DDoS botnet, then there's a much greater chance that someone's going to say, hey, what the hell, why are these bots spewing a gigabyte per second at me, or where's all this traffic coming from? Someone's going to wise up, and there might be an admin out there who's going to, you know, maybe figure, hey, I wonder what happens if I run a packet capture. You're going to get noticed. So throttle yourself, you know, show a little self-restraint. I know that's hard for some of you out there, but just don't go into every situation guns blazing. And then another thing you could do would be to take the same precautions that you would if you were seriously intent on hacking into a system. Don't do it from your house. Duh. I know this is obvious, but it bears repeating. Don't do it from your house. Do not do it from your house. If you are, then run it through Tor. Make all of your steps, every step that you take to set up the botnet, tunnel it through some proxy, preferably one that you know or trust or isn't run by the feds.
I mean, all it
wireless,
takes is,
you know?
All it takes is one mistake on your part for people to have a place to find you. So you need to be very tedious in your activities to not get caught.
One way, I mean, the majority of the organized crime-related botnets, since they are distributed through zero-day exploits hosted in web pages like the WMF exploit, that which automatically downloads a bot from a file out in, you know, no pants of Stan or something, then you want to make sure, that, number one, that you're either hosting it on a compromised box itself or that you're not paying for something that's in your own name. Preferably operated out of a country, like most of them do, that don't have any laws on the books, that don't know what a botnet is enough to make it illegal. If you were, say, you know, we're going to pick on Nigeria since they're the easiest and we do it all the time on BitRev, and we haven't been car bombed yet. So say you're running it out of Nigeria, just pay off the right people. The answer is, I mean, it's going to cost you. It's going to cost you time, or it's going to cost you money, or it's going to cost you, well, friends or beer or something.
Sexual favors.
Sexual favors, exactly. That's how I got Verbal to install a botnet for me.
I thought you said that's how I got Verbal installed.
Yeah, that's how I got Verbal installed. So it's going to cost you something, and generally don't tell people. Like, if you're hacking into a box, don't sign it with your own name. Don't leave significant, you know, characteristics for the bots. A lot of these guys are so damn proud of their custom pro botnets that they'll leave a tag in there that says, you know, Ponzered by Papa Joe Mama or something. And then you Google Papa Joe Mama and sure shit, there's his MySpace account. Again, you know, with pictures of his friends and his family and his baby and his kitten or whatever. You know, just don't be a dumbass, you know? If you want to set up a botnet, restrain yourself for 30 days. And just read up everything you can. It's the same with any crime. I mean, obviously, I'm not condoning it or advocating anyway, but just, it's general, don't be a noob things to avoid getting caught.
Yeah, it's like, don't know enough just to set it up.
Right.
And then get effed in the A. But, you know, I mean, like, learn all about it, seriously. Yeah, okay. So, we've covered, all the aspects that I wanted to, for, you know, for botnets. But so let's kind of get into a little bit like next gen stuff, things that might be coming out hypothetically, or you know, things that we're starting to see. In the news, actually, this had a lot of coverage for some reason, and you mentioned it, that instead of using IRC for the control, command and control, people are using HTTP and other things that aren't so, they're less conspicuous, I guess, and, you know, something like that. So, like, and, you know, and also Savant said that the that's, whatever we're talking about is just the things that we have been seeing. So if someone has some, like, really new technology out there that's really good, I mean, no, we might not even know about it yet because, you know, they haven't been caught or they just haven't been seen because it's so good. So, I mean, you know, what do you think about that? Like, what other type of command and control mechanisms can you envision for the future?
Well, I'm really surprised that it hasn't taken over, like, the existing Kazaa network. I mean, that thing is crawling with malicious files and, you know, viruses and worms and whatever else. The decentralized model worked so well to avoid being caught by the RIAA or the MPAA or, you know, head up your ass AA, just some random governing officiality that states that they're trying to stop it. It's worked so well to decentralize that I'm really surprised that we're not seeing more of that. Although, how you would control it from a decentralized system or authenticate would, I don't know, that'd be pretty tough.
See, that's the thing. There's no need to have it be centralized, like the command and control, because there have already been research for, you know, distributed and ad hoc networks, you know, especially like these overlay networks. Like, you know, some implementations of them are like Freenet, or there was this anonymous IRC network that hasn't been, you know, worked on in a while, since 2003. But there's something called IIP, Invisible Net. I mean, I used to use that, and, you know, it's a shame that the person who was the lead developer on it stopped doing it. But, you know, it's possible. There are technologies out there that allow you to control a bunch of, you know, hosts, or talk to a bunch of hosts, and, you know, in a distributed way. And, you know, you can even do it anonymously and covertly. You know, you don't need to do this, like, centralized crap where everyone in your botnet and the grandmother connects to one server and, you know, you issues commands out to them. So I think, you know, the network layer and the protocol side can have a lot of, you know, enhancements, because right now it's just doing like the dumbest thing possible, and, you know, you can just do a little tiny delta and make it, you know, the fuck better, okay? And, you know, it'll be so much harder for people to track you. And if you're at the forefront of this development and you keep on evolving your botnets and adding new things to them to make them smarter, then, you know, all the other people, like the law officials and the security researchers, are not going to find you until everyone, you know, until enough people start using that shit, then, you know, you just move on. But, you know, the network side is definitely one way to do it. Like, when we were talking about the updates, right, Savant was saying that there are botnets that tell, you know, relay kind of the message, the update message, to each other in some way. But, you know, you can do that all the time. You don't need to connect to every single one at some, you know, at any point for anything. Just connect, you know, to a couple, and then they'll take care of the rest. But that does mean that the bots themselves, the software on them, has to be more intelligent, and they have to kind of keep some sort of, you know, networking routing protocol that's an overlay for everything else, right? So, you know, it's like you can do so much in that area, and I'm just surprised that people aren't doing that.
No, you know, one thing I think I forgot to mention earlier about one thing that, as a researcher, that gives me trouble when trying to monitor botnets is the use of the IRC daemons Unreal and Ultimate, who both have various methods of obfuscating the IP address. So if you're not in cahoots with the person who's actually running the IRC server, if they're not a legitimate person, but maybe someone from Nopantistan who just has a hard-on against the U.S. or whatever and wants to run these servers, if you're just idly hanging out on the channel, it's a lot more difficult to determine an IP address of these people. So just knowing where they're hanging out isn't necessarily enough to kick down any doors or get any search warrants or subpoenas or even email the administrator of the server. It's not that easy necessarily.
Right. I mean, you don't have to design a new transport protocol for this shit. Just know a little bit more about it, and you know maybe there are loopholes that you can get through to not get caught, right? And the other thing that I have not seen at all is the use of crypto in any of the botnets.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure it exists, but
like there is an excellent book, and the authors. I forgot the other one, but one of them is Morty Young, and they're crypto researchers in some university in Nilpantistan.
Mm-hmm.
And the book is called Malicious Cryptography, and it covers a lot of things that I think a lot of people will find useful. You know, so for example, some things that they can do is have crypto counters. That you know, let's say you know some people want to see how many bots they have. You don't need for all of them to check in someplace. Just have them talk to some other bot, and they all keep a counter, right? And this crypto counter, what it does is it allows you to basically keep a count of anything. And if you don't have the proper key for it, then it's just gibberish to anyone else who's looking at it. And something else that you can do is to actually steal some piece of information and take it without them knowing that you took that information or copied it. You know, okay, so for example, let's say you wanted to hack some box and steal the password file, right? So you were, you know, normally without crypto, you just log in and then you would, you know, CP it or copy it or whatever. But there's a way to do it so they don't know what file you copied, where you're storing it, and if they see it, they don't know what it is or who created it or what it was created from. You know, there are a lot of these tools, so you don't have to be a cryptologist to use these. You just need to get the fucking implementation and, you know, to run it and incorporate it into your botnet. Just know enough to use the software package which is available at their site. I mean, just go look for that book. You know, that's only one of the things that you can do. And I mean, you know, you don't even need to use, like, next-gen researchy crypto. I mean, there's already a lot of crypto out there that you can use. Like, I'm sure, you know, most of the bots that are out there are transmitting their shit through plain text, right? I mean, use SSL, TLS, whatever. You know, just kind of protect yourself.
Right.
And, okay, so that's my rant for right now.
Yeah, well, you know, one thing that we didn't really cover that I think maybe we should go into, especially since we look like we have another 15 minutes or so, is we talked to the black hats how to not get caught. So maybe we should send out something to the white hats and the systems administrators that says, how do you know that you've been owned, or where do I look to see in my system if I've got a botnet running? So some of the things you can do would be, as we discussed earlier, to run a PSA UX and look for any odd processes. Yeah, if you're running a like tripwire, then you might notice that if any of your files have been changed. Check out the temp directory. More often than not, if you do an ls-lah, make sure you're getting those invisible files because they like to name directories ... And to anyone but the most careful sysadmin or someone with experience, you might glance right over it. Who's your Apache user running at? Is it running as nobody or www user, or is it running as Apache? Do a find /-user Apache. Okay, so we talked about making sure that the Apache user shouldn't be able to access files that it shouldn't. There's no reason that Apache should ever need to access a user's home directory if it's not in the web root or if it's not that user whose web server it's running on. Isolate the privileges. Make sure that if one user is, you know, you're a web host, say, and you're letting people upload their own files and you're being pretty trustworthy and you don't suspect your users of anything malicious, but even still, don't trust them to be good people. You need to make sure that, let's say that you are specifically selling services to someone who's got less than noble intentions. Are they able to access parts of the system that they shouldn't? Are they able to read configuration files that maybe has passwords to other users or their PHP applications or what have you? Any other foothold into the system that might allow them to install something? Because remember, you don't need to be root to run bot. You just need to have a command line access. which Apache can do through PHP or through Perl or through any number of web application vulnerabilities. Just, you know, general sysadmin goodness. Just, you know, take care of your shit. Take a course at a night class somewhere at a community college. Hire the kid at work that wears the black t-shirts all the time for you non-technical people. Just make sure that the trust is there and that it's nothing is ever implicit or take it for granted.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't want to go through all the trouble of doing all that shit yourself, I mean, there are tons of security tools out there. And, I mean, one that I want to highlight is Bastille Linux. It not only runs on Linux, it actually runs on most Unix systems, including Mac OS X, you know, for all you Apple people out there. But what it does is it basically takes you through a series of, you know, prompts asking you questions like, do you want to turn on your firewall? What services do you want to let in or let out or any of that stuff? And it's like, do you want your UMass to change? You know, and it'll tell you about it, and it'll tell you all the different things that it means. I mean, there are tons of things. Like, I think there are about 20 or more steps in that, and each of them deals with a different aspect of securing your box. And you don't need to know anything on how to actually do it. Like, you don't have to learn IP tables or, you know, how to use the firewall on your OS, and you don't have to, you know how to set the UMass for your user and all of that junk. I mean, just run it, install it. It should only take you about 15 minutes. You know, like, I've done it on OS X and Linux on Gentoo, and, you know, both of them were a breeze, and I didn't have to worry about doing any of the shit that I normally would have to do. So, I mean, there are, you know, that's just one example, but there are so many things out there that you can use. And, you know, I don't want to turn this into kind of like a secure your box rant, because I know you heard it before, but seriously, I know a lot of you guys don't do it, you know. Just get on it. And if you're using Windows, there are things you can do. I mean, there are firewalls you can install, make sure you patch and everything, you know. No matter what OS you're using, you're not safe. So, you know, just do it. It's part of using your computer as, you know, a responsible person, and not just fucking putting your box out there and basically hang a flag that says take me over and use me to steal someone's money.
Yeah, and you bring up a good point. You're talking about Windows patching and just not being a noob. That's fine and good for those of us who are tech savvy and who have an active interest in security and want to make sure that we're exercising best practices. But what about grandma? You know, is your grandma still running Windows 95? Does she just now upgrade to a cable modem because you told her to get with the future, but she's still running an operating system that's no longer being supported by Microsoft and is wide open? I mean, those are the machines that we're seeing that are parts of these 5 million node bot networks. I mean, Jesus, 5 million nodes. I mean, as researchers, we're seriously outgunned. What can you do? If grandma's still running Windows 95 and she's just doing it to, you know, check her email maybe and read the latest Garfield comic online, then fuck, I don't know. Talk to her about Linux. Say, hey, grandma, let me give you this. This is probably just as easy. I mean, if she's hip and she's willing to learn something cool, but if not, then you know, as a responsible computer user, then I think that's on you to make sure that the internet is less hostile, or that, you know, these phishers and these DDoS botnet operators and these organized criminals aren't getting away with it. I mean, it's the apathy and the general carelessness that makes this problem as rampant as it is today, and we're nowhere near the end of the problem. It's not just going to go away on its own. As long as there's a lot of money to be made and it's easy as it is now, there's always going to be a return on investment for these guys, and there's always going to be a one more box to root, one more box to make into a botnet, and it starts all over again.
I mean, this has happened to me on more than several occasions. This is what I want you to do. The next time someone, like, if security, the topic of security comes up, if someone says, I don't care about my computer, I don't have anything on it that I don't like, you know, that I don't want people to see, I mean, that I want, yeah, don't want other people to see, then fucking slap them on the face and tell them that I told you to do that. verbal@benrev.com, because that's just ignorant. Like, I don't want to take over your box for your shit. I want to take it over for your connection and just have a node in my botnet to do some other junk. And, you know, I've told so many other people this, and they don't seem to care, and I don't know what the deal is, but, you know, it's like, God, don't be retarded. Now, one more thing I would like to go back to a little bit. We kind of got off in a little rant, as we so often like to do.
We're prone to do.
Yeah, and it's about the kind of the next-gen botnet stuff. So we're talking about before, and I was asking questions about whether, you know, bots themselves get updated and they kind of change, right? And Sivan was saying, you know, they usually get updated from a config file, or, you know, they only have one vulnerability and stuff. And I think for, you know, botnet designers out there, you can take a page from the worm people. It's like, you know, there are technologies out there, and it has been done before, so it's not like some new rocket science thing, where you can make your bot, not the network part, but the other intruding part, more intelligent, where you can give it, you know, more than one vulnerability, and if, you know, in like, say every like few months, you just update the entire executable on that bot and just run a new thing with different exploits and whatever, so you can keep updating it. Because, I mean, like, you don't, Sivan was saying, you see all these ghost bots running around, joining IRC channels and stuff. Like, if you took the time, well, you didn't take the time, but if someone, you know, wrote some software to own all these boxes, you don't want to, you know, have to go through that again, you know, for a new exploit. It's like, you've already owned it. Just fucking update your software. I mean, it's the same thing with any piece of software you run. Just update it, and, you know, it'll keep doing what you want it to do.
Yeah, I mean, the technology already exists. The best practices are out there in terms of just rebuilding robust, redundant software. If botnet building's your thing and you've got nothing else to do, get a girlfriend. But if you can't find a girlfriend, then, you know, take extra steps. There's things like revolving DNS, where I've seen phishing sites that own DNS servers that have PHP front ends that they just flip a switch, and all of a sudden it just reroutes all the traffic to a different new box that they just paid for. You can come up with fail safes and remove the single point of failure. And go more covert, and like you said, you know, use encryption. Encryption is criminally underused in these things, and I, you know, it's with a heavy heart that I even admit this, because as my day job, I am a security researcher, and I do get paid to sort of track these guys down and to sort of find out what we can learn about them. But seeing the ways that I know that we catch them, I can say with uncertainty that most of the time, if you've just taken that extra step, you know, lock that other door or close that window, then your bot's going to live a lot longer, that you're going to go unnoticed a lot longer, and you're going to be more successful in whatever your endeavor is.
You probably won't get caught and go to federal pound me in the ass prison.
You know, and it's worth mentioning that if you do follow our advice and you do have a fairly successful botnet, you're making all sorts of cash, send beer to, just email me, send beer tubes, and we'll work something out, maybe at the next conference or something, and, you know, share your stories with us.
Exactly. Yeah, we're always looking for good material. So I think that about wraps it up.
Yeah, that about wraps it up.
So, let's do shouts.
Yeah, why don't you go first while I stall to figure some out.
Okay, well, I just want to give a shout-out to Kyle L. on the IRC channel. He's been really good with helping with BinRev and all that stuff, getting involved, which I urge everyone else to do. And also Tom, who was supposed to be doing the show with us, and he's either drunk, asleep, or stoned, or something, or high, and he's not here. But thanks a lot, Tom, for all the input that you gave before the show.
Yeah,
and
thank you.
Putting it together. That's two I have.
Okay, shouts, let's see, everyone in the IRC channel, everyone on the forums, specific shouts to Beef and to Black Ratchet and to Druid from Tipping Point and other people who are helping me with some Astros projects I'm working on, and shit, I don't know, my girlfriend, her Gecko, everyone here in San Diego, Gene.
The background noise you've been hearing, the chirping, is courtesy of Savant's Gecko.
Yeah, my girlfriend's Gecko. That's not just the people in the audience that are terribly bored, is it? I mean, maybe we should loop that. Anyway, so let's go ahead and do our closing music. This is a song that just came out recently. It is a really well-done remix of U2's Sunday Bloody Sunday, except this guy named RX chopped up the some dialogue from President Bush and actually has him singing the song Sunday Bloody Sunday set to the music. It's pretty good, so I hope you enjoy.
So as we always say, I'll see you again next week, same hack time.
Same hack channel.
There's been a lot of talk about this next song. This song is not a rebel song. This song is Sunday Bloody Sunday. Believe the news today. Can't close my eyes and make it go away. How long? How long? As we sing this song. How long? Too long. For too long. Tonight, we can be as one. Tonight. Broken bottles under children's feet. Bodies strewn across the goddamn streets. But I won't heed the battle call. It pushed my back up against the wall. Sunday, bloody Sunday. Sunday, bloody Sunday. Sunday, bloody Sunday. Sunday, bloody Sunday. Let's roll. And the battle's just begun. This many lost. And tell me who has won. The trenches dug within our hearts. Mothers, children, brothers, sisters, one at heart. Sunday, bloody Sunday. Sunday, bloody Sunday. How long? How long? Must we sing this song? How long? Too long. For too long. Tonight, we can be as one. Tonight. Sunday, bloody Sunday. Sunday, bloody Sunday. Let's roll.
Details on my agenda, you can find them online. The web address is not very imaginative, but it's easy to remember. Park.com.
Wipe the tears from your eyes. Wipe your tears away. Wipe your tears away. Wipe your tears away. Wipe your bloodshot eyes. Sunday, bloody Sunday. Sunday, bloody Sunday. Sunday, bloody Sunday. Sunday, bloody Sunday.
Let's roll.
And it's true, not a meme. What facts, fiction, and TV reality. And today the millions cry. We eat and drink while tomorrow they die. Sunday, bloody Sunday. Sunday, bloody Sunday. Sunday, bloody Sunday. Sunday, bloody Sunday.